Boris Johnson promises to be out of the EU by the end of January. More protests rock Chile and charges are dropped against a journalist in Washington, D.C. With these and other stories, I'm Paul D'Arienzo with the news for Saturday, December 14th, 2019. Vigils and church services were held Saturday in Connecticut to mark the 7th anniversary of the Sandy Hook Elementary School shooting and remember victims of other gun violence since the tragedy in Newtown. 20 first graders and 6 educators were killed at the school on December 14, 2012. According to Connecticut Against Gun Violence, which helped to organize vigils held in the state on Saturday, more than 700,000 Americans have been killed or injured in gun violence since the Sandy Hook shooting. Governor Ned Lamont ordered all state and U.S. flags in Connecticut to be flown at half staff from sunrise to sunset on Saturday in remembrance of the Newtown victims. And New York City police arrested a 13-year-old boy Friday in connection with the murder of a college student in a Manhattan park, rattling a city in which crime rates have plunged in recent years. Tessa Majors, 18, was stabbed multiple times with a knife on Wednesday evening during a robbery while walking through Harlem's Morningside Park near her school, Barnard College. She was completing her first semester at the women-only college after leaving her home in Charlottesville, Virginia, to move to the city. TV News reported police found the 13-year-old boy on Thursday while canvassing a building lobby nearby. News channels reported that the boy, whose name has not been disclosed, confessed to police that he and two friends tried to rob Majors and stabbed her. There's been no comment from police. South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham says he will not try to pretend to be a fair juror should Donald Trump face impeachment trial in the U.S. Senate. The close Trump ally said he was trying to give a pretty clear signal. I've made up my mind. I'm not trying to pretend to be a fair juror here. What I see coming, happening today, is just partisan nonsense. If Trump is impeached, a trial will be held in the Senate in January. Republicans are in control there, and the majority leader, Mitch McConnell, has said the president will not be convicted and removed. The Kentuckian caused further anger among Democrats this week when he said that he was taking my cues from the White House regarding strategy for the trial. Graham also asked about his own past opposition to Trump when both men were running for the Republican presidential nomination. Then Graham famously called Trump a race-baiting, xenophobic, religious bigot. Clearly, I wasn't a fan of his campaign, right? Said Graham, but there's the way it has to work. When you lose, accept it. The American people didn't believe that. They made him their president. And across the pond, Boris Johnson, the New York City-born Prime Minister of England, was crowing to supporters about his massive win in Britain's parliamentary elections that he called 3 years early. Johnson was vexed by his inability to get a deal through to remove the UK from the European Union. But now the colorful Conservative says he's ready to meet a January 31st deadline by passing necessary legislation before Christmas.
You have changed the political landscape, you've changed the Conservative Party for the better, and you've changed the future of our country for the better. Every single one of our wonderful MPs, our wonderful new MPs, they're all... Now, do you support that deal?
Yes!
They do, they all back it in. We have 100% support. We can get it in before Christmas. We've just been going over the timetable. We can definitely get in before Christmas, and then we're out on January the 30th. But I want the people of the North East to know that we in the Conservative Party and I will repay your trust. Everything that we do, everything I do as your Prime Minister will be devoted to repaying that trust. And first of all, what I'll be going to do to repay Brexit done. We want, of course, to improve our fantastic National Health Service. And that's why we're making the biggest investments. When we get down to Westminster, we begin our work. Remember, we are not the masters. We are the servants now. And our job is to serve the people of this country and to deliver on our priorities. And our priorities and their priorities are the same. And of course, they're getting Brexit done. But it is also delivering on our National Health Service, our education, safer streets, better hospitals, a better future for our country. That is what we are going to deliver. That is what we are going to focus on. Thank you all very much for your time. Thank you for coming along this morning. Thank you for your wonderful achievement in transforming our party, transforming the political map of this country, and I think putting Britain on a brighter, better path. Thank you all very much.
But in Glasgow, Scotland, and many places across the Union, protesters were out in force.
I'm marching because I'm really angry that the Tories have been elected. We're going to lose the NHS. Just like, I feel like we're living in a really... There's no compassion in the society. Like, if people want to elect someone like Boris Johnson, who has said horrible, horrible things about so many sort of marginalised groups, I just think it's fucked. It's like totally... I'm marching because I'm angry.
I'm here because, as a young person, I don't feel like I'm properly represented. And the guy that's been elected as Prime Minister is a racist, fascist, homophobic person that shouldn't be leading the country. And he's going to ruin it for the most vulnerable people in society.
We're marching for our freedom and for our country. And for all the vulnerable people who are being f***ed over by the Tories.
I think Brexit is a really stupid idea, and I am very worried about what's going to happen. Luckily, there are many options for me as an EU migrant, but I'm even more worried for my Scottish friends who are going to be stuck here on a very small island with a bunch of bigots.
Every struggle must be defended. Every picket line must be defended.
They do not speak for young people. They do not speak for all of us here today.
Commentator Ian Williams was shocked by the size of Johnson's win, but he adds leaving the EU won't be that easy. Your reaction to Boris Johnson's win?
I don't know. It's difficult to...
Was it expected?
Not on that scale, but there was a false dawn because the long lines for the polls meant that many people thought that, well, you know, the polls were underestimating the Labour vote. Lots of people had turned out to vote. It turned out a lot of people did turn out to vote, but it wasn't necessarily for Labour. And I don't know. I can't help feeling a bit bitter and thinking that my fellow Brits feel that they are destined to be ruled by bubbling, callous, upper-class twits forever. It's almost like something from Monty Python.
He says that by Christmas he's going to have everything in place, and then by January 31st he'll be ready to leave. Brexit.
I don't believe it. Well, for a start, every word he says is a lie, and some are too, as we know. But he's failed consistently to deliver there. He might be able to get things through Parliament now, but he has to persuade the European Union and the Irish, the government of Ireland and others to agree. And then there's all the other complications. He might want to leave, but it's quite clear that Scotland doesn't. And he's precipitating a constitutional crisis in Scotland, which might, understandably, now want to leave the Union. He said he's going to deny, he's not going to allow another Scottish referendum. But it's not really up to him. Scotland is now united in its determination to vote for the Scots nationalists.
What's the situation with Scotland? How does that play into this? What was the last referendum like?
Last referendum was, I believe, 55-45. In favour of staying with Britain. And he now says that was determinative. But of course, that was under different circumstances. That was a vote about whether they should stay as part of the United Kingdom, which it was assumed was part of the European Union. So really, even though I don't actually agree that Scotland should leave, they have every right to say, no, the situation has changed now. We don't want to stay united to an England that's leaving Europe. It's an entirely reasonable position to ask for a referendum. And I think for looking at the results this time, it will be a vote for independence. In Northern Ireland, you now actually have parties calling for unity, United Ireland, in a majority amongst the Westminster MPs. Although that's complicated because Sinn Féin doesn't actually take seats in Westminster. It gets its MPs elected, but they don't go and get seated in the House of Commons for pursuing a century-old abstentionist role. But they might even change that under the circumstances.
That's what he says. That's what Boris Johnson says is a new landscape, a new political landscape in England.
Yes, in England. In England. That's key. Not necessarily in the rest of Britain. Sadly, Wales went along with him to some extent. Whether he can deliver the results in time is very dubious, because if he can't, then he's precipitating a major economic and political crisis for Britain and its relations with the rest of the world as well. I mean, you really have to... There's a sanity clause here. Anybody who is putting his faith, leaving a negotiated trading arrangement with Europe in favour of an unspecified super deal with Donald Trump is obviously not quite of this world. Who would rely upon Donald Trump, who has declared trade war on all his closest relatives?
Trump would said that he would help out Boris Johnson. Did people believe that in England and Great Britain when they went to vote? Did they really?
I don't believe so. I mean, I thought it was a very interesting piece of strategy that Trump actually agreed and was asked to stay away from Boris Johnson when he visited London, because any overt shows of support by Trump for Johnson would have been counterproductive with many of the British voters. So,
what about the National Health Insurance, the National Health Service?
Once again, Boris Johnson pledged that he is supporting it. He's going to put more money into it. It's interesting. What he did to some extent was a piece of reverse triangulation, to use Bill Clinton's favorite old term. He took a lot of the Labour Party's policies and claimed them as his own. The difference is that whereas the Labour Party actually intends them to carry them out, it's very dubious whether Boris Johnson will. He will break them like all of the other pledges he's made.
What does this show as far as here in the United States? I mean, it looks like here is somebody like Trump who won a smashing victory in the elections, and the United States is famous for being a former colony of England. Are we going to go the same way? Is this telling people here in the United States to expect the same?
You've already seen the arguments from some of the Democrats that this proves that you shouldn't elect somebody who has radical policies like Corbyn. In other words, don't vote for Warren or Saunders, because this is what you'll get. I'm sure that Joe Biden and the other moderates are evoking this example even as we speak.
Anything like that?
It's a sad day for Britain all around. It taxes one's patriotism to the utmost to think that people would turn out in such numbers to vote for an incompetent, callous idiot. Well, that's the sad thing is he isn't an idiot. He's unlike Trump. He is actually pretty intellectually accomplished. He just hides it well.
Commentator Ian Williams reports on the United Nations from New York. And you're listening to the news on WBAI in New York. I'm Paul DiRienzo. In Washington, the United States government has dropped a false charge of assault against the Gray Zone editor Max Blumenthal, stemming from an incident at the Venezuelan embassy in May. Blumenthal was seized from his home by a group of officers and held for 2 days in cells and cages. The case was dropped after Blumenthal's legal team saw call logs that would have exposed collusion between the Secret Service and right-wing Venezuelan activists. Blumenthal discusses his vindication, the state of the U.S.-backed coup attempt in Venezuela, ongoing efforts to silence his blog called The Gray Zone. He spoke with WBAI earlier today.
I was arrested on false charges 5 months after an incident where I delivered food and sanitary supplies along with 19 other people to the Venezuelan embassy in May. And after several weeks and being defamed online and falsely accused of beating an older woman, the government dropped all of its charges against me.
How did you wind up being charged?
There was a extremely important protest against the Trump administration's coup where activists and journalists, with the permission of the UN-recognized Venezuelan government, entered the Venezuelan embassy and held it as the Trump administration and Juan Guaido's U.S.-funded team in Washington attempted to seize it. They were surrounded and besieged by right-wing opposition hooligans of the Venezuelan diaspora who were being used as a kind of proxy force by the Secret Service to prevent food and sanitary supplies from getting in to those activists. And so we delivered food and on a number of occasions, and on one occasion after successfully getting food in, and nonviolently, we were falsely accused by members of the Venezuelan opposition of physically assaulting them. 5 months later, a team of D.C. police showed up at my door, hauled me out of my house, and threw me in jail. I was falsely accused of simple assault, denied a call to a lawyer, and I spent 2 days in jail before I saw a judge.
And then you were released?
I was released on my own recognizance, and the government was preparing for trial. And basically, my lawyer and the lawyers of the person who was going to be my co-defendant, Ben Rubenstein, who was also arrested and falsely accused of simple assault, began demanding evidence from the government, including the Secret Service's call logs from the night of May 8th when we made the food delivery. And they didn't have them. The call logs had mysteriously disappeared. There were a number of discovery requests that the government didn't seem to want to fulfill. And basically, they had no evidence, whereas we had loads of exculpatory evidence because we were innocent. They ultimately dropped the charges, but it's important to mention that Ben Rubenstein, who was going to be my co-defendant, who helped me deliver the food along with 18 other people, had been facing prosecution for over 5 months. I had this warrant that was executed 5 months after this incident, but I was told that a judge initially rejected it. So the D.C. police made no attempt to investigate this false charge. And I found out after getting out of jail that I was listed in the warrant as armed and dangerous, which is an extremely rare listing that put me at the threat of harm from the police officers who came to get me.
Did you find out why they did that?
No, and that would require subsequent legal action. There are two points that are important to make here. The first point is that, as I mentioned, 20 people brought food to the embassy. They were completely nonviolent. And if anything, we were victims of opposition's violence. They were violent towards everyone in and around the embassy. I was targeted because of my journalism, because I'm a known quantity to the Venezuelan opposition, because at the Gray Zone, we've been tearing holes in their narrative, exposing their leadership as corrupt, mendacious, basically bought off by the U.S. government. And so they just simply picked me out and selected someone to falsely accuse me of assault in order to silence me. And a number of prominent pundits, when my warrant was leaked online, not only celebrated my arrest, but presumed me guilty before being proven innocent and defamed me, accusing me of kicking an elderly woman. Some accused me of beating a pregnant woman. I don't know how someone elderly can get pregnant.
Are these Venezuelan commentators, or are they known?
No, many of them are American.
Who are some of them?
Senior editor for Foreign Policy magazine, James Palmer, the anonymous right-wing Reagan Battalion account, a number of Syrian regime change fanatics who are working in the media. I put together a comprehensive list of these pundits who defamed me in the Gray Zone at the article announcing that the government had dropped all of its charges. So you can pretty much go there for a compendium of some of the worst people on the internet. The other point I wanted to make is that this could happen to anyone, and it has. There's a pattern of the Venezuelan opposition leveling false charges of assault against their political opponents. Most recently, it was Medea Benjamin of Code Pink. She went to protest a press conference with Juan Guaido's fake ambassador in D.C., whose salary is paid by the U.S. government now, and Debbie Wasserman Schultz, who is sort of the face and voice of the corporate wing of the Democratic Party, and they were doing a kind of regime change press conference on Capitol Hill. Code Pink and their allies peacefully protested, and Medea Benjamin was assaulted herself. She was being choked by a member of the opposition, and then Debbie Wasserman Schultz had her arm pulled, and she said, "Call the Capitol Police." Next thing you know, Medea's house was surrounded by police, and they were trying to bring her into a squad car and arrest her, even though they had no warrant or evidence. She was able to avert false charges and arrest, unlike me. But the point is that they can do this to anyone, and they have been doing it to anyone who they deem threatening to their mission, which is to violate international law and take over a government and all its institutions in Washington. So there has to be some accountability, and there has to be some deterrence. So I'm exploring what I can do to deter these future false allegations and the use of local law enforcement as a tool of revenge.
Max Blumenthal is editor of the news blog The Gray Zone. anti-government protests continued in the capital of Chile on Friday, with barricades set on fire and smoke filling the streets. People were also seen dancing, with a music band performing in front of the protesters. The recent protests came after the United Nations issued a report stating that human rights norms had been violated by the security forces, documenting 113 specific cases of torture and ill treatment and 24 cases of sexual violence against women, men, and adolescent girls and boys. Ann Peterman is Executive Director of Global Justice Ecology. She's in Santiago tonight. She's on her way to a new set of protests set for this evening in the capital.
We're down here in Chile, where there's been a popular uprising going on for almost 2 months. And earlier this week, there was a judgment that sort of let their president off the hook for all of the human rights violations. So people had a big mobilization last night down at the Plaza Dignidad, and it was very intense. People were angry that there hadn't been justice done in their minds. And there was a lot of battling with the police, a lot of tear gas from the police, water cannons, and so forth.
And so you have your goggles and gas mask?
Just regular masks, but not gas masks, but definitely goggles, which has been very handy. My partner and I have been to about 5 or 6 of these now. I'm not really sure. We lost track. But it varies in intensity. But sometimes, boy, you really need those goggles and mask when the tear gas is falling right at your feet.
You said that left the president off the hook. What happened that left the president off the hook? What are the details of that?
There was a constitutional accusation against him and his right-hand man over the human rights violations that have happened since the protests began. And also they were accused of calling a state of emergency without having the proper authority to do so. There's been a lot of human rights violations. The police have been accused of murder, of torture, of rape. And most commonly, they've been accused of shooting their shotguns, which are filled with these kind of rubber lead bullets, shooting them from shotguns right at people's heads and people's faces. So 350 people have lost eyes in this. So there's a lot of outrage about the way protesters have been treated. The government sort of let them off the hook by not pursuing those charges, although they did convict, quote unquote, his right-hand man. So there was a bone thrown to the protesters, but they weren't satisfied.
What is the goal of the protest?
The goal of the protest is a new constitution. The people here are sick of the neoliberal, the corporate globalization experiment that began here in 1973 when they overthrew the democratically elected Salvador Allende and put in the dictator Pinochet. And ever since then, people have had the same constitution. Pinochet wrote the current constitution. People are tired of that, and they're tired of this top-down economics that is making the rich richer and the poor poorer faster than in any other country in Latin America.
Wasn't Chile at one time considered the darling of neoliberalism, the most successful capitalist country in South America?
It still is, for sure. People say that. And it's very successful for a few people, the 1% or the 1% of the 1%. They're doing just fine. But it's everybody else. It's the people sleeping in the parks in a tent and the people panhandling on the street and so forth and so on. And even the people trying just to scrape by a living by selling baked goods or fruit on the street. These are the people that are suffering. The mass number of people that are just barely surviving because of the economic inequalities.
Take a minute and describe what these protests are like. What's it like when you arrive?
A lot of the metros are closed here. That was one of the things the protesters did at the very beginning, was shut down a lot of metro stations because it was the metro fare being hiked that sort of sparked this uprising back in October. We actually take a taxi. It's too far from where we need to be. It's too far from our apartment to walk. So we take a taxi somewhere along the main route, not close, of course, and then walk in. And, you know, as you walk in, you just are surrounded by throngs of people that are also walking in. And everybody's walking toward the Plaza de la Dignidad, formerly the Plaza Italia, which is right in the center there. And that's where everybody rallies when these events happen. And then on the side streets is where the protesters take on the Carabineros, the Chilean National Police. Well, there's always this throng of young men and women who are the most angry, let's say, who dress themselves all in black and have projectiles that they toss back and forth with the police. That they throw rocks, the police throw tear gas and rubber bullets.
Do the police attempt to clear out the plaza of the protesters? Do they actually come into that plaza area?
They do, yeah. It'll go on for a while where they put some level of effort into it. And then once the numbers get small enough later into the night, that's when they'll come in with several of their police trucks, I forgot what they're called, lined up next to each other to just literally sweep the place clean. And that's when people finally have to go. It's very interesting to see that people here consider property destruction very differently than they do in the U.S. In fact, a cab driver told us, if people aren't destroying something, they won't be taken seriously. If they just have a peaceful march with banners and signs, they won't be taken seriously. It's not till something gets broken that they're taken seriously. It's a very different scene down here.
Are there arrests? Do they arrest people?
They do. I haven't seen too many arrests in Santiago, but definitely in Temuco, which is the Mapuche-dominated area of the country, the Mapuche being the indigenous people, the police down there are much more aggressive and much nastier because of the racism that happens against the indigenous people. We've definitely seen people get arrested there, but not so much here in Santiago.
And is that where they disappear or are beaten up or the murders and things you mentioned earlier happen, the rapes and stuff like that, torture?
That's been the history, yeah, that people get arrested or picked up in their homes even and get taken in somewhere. And then it's not that they disappear. There have been a number of people who've been killed in the protests themselves, but people do come out of there with stories of torture and rape and so forth. There's a feminist anthem out there now called El Violador Es Tú, which is Spanish for the rapist is you. And it was formed here in Chile by a group of women because of the way that the women protesters are treated by the police. And it's now gone all over the world. Women sing it all over the world, which is pretty cool.
Ann Peterman is Executive Director of Global Justice Ecology. She's in Santiago, Chile, underway to a new set of protests set for tonight. Patriarchy is a judge who judges us because of us being born, and our punishment is the violence you don't see. Patriarchy is a judge who judges us because of being born, and our punishment is the violence you don't see. It's femicide, impunity for my killer. It's the disappearance. It's the rape. And it wasn't my fault, nor where I was, nor how I dressed. And it wasn't my fault, nor where I was, nor how I dressed. And it wasn't my fault, not where I was, nor how I dressed. You are the rapist. You are the rapist. They are the police, the judges, the state, the president. And that's some of the news for Saturday, December 14th, 2019. The news was engineered by James Irsay. For the WBAI News, I'm Paul DiRienzo.
Coming up momentarily on WBAI, we have On Contact with Chris Hedges.